Some called him Cecil, some called him Cecil. He was beloved. And a year ago this week, the black-maned lion was lured out of the Hwange National Park Wildlife Reserve in Zimbabwe by game hunters hired by Minnesota dentist Walter Palmer, who hit him with a bow and arrow, then stalked the wounded creature for hours, finally finishing him off with a rifle. Palmer had legal authority to kill the magnificent lion, though two men in his party were charged with luring the lion out of his refuge. There was outrage and a call to make it illegal to kill lions, but there was also new curiosity about how Cecil lived and concern about what would happen to his mates, his offspring. Well, that story is told in a marvelous young person's book called Cecil's Pride, The True Story of a Lion King. It's written by Craig Hatkoff and his daughters Juliana and Isabella, authors of a series of nonfiction books on animals. Some of us have Owen and Mazay about the stranded baby hippo who strikes up a friendship with a 130-year-old tortoise. It's great. Craig is also co-founder of the Tribeca Film Festival. He joins us from New York. Welcome.
I'm delighted to be here, Robin.
And the book is illustrated with stunning photos taken by Brent Stablecamp, who was something of a keeper to Cecil. He tracked Cecil for 9 years. He's Zimbabwean and joins us from there. Brent, tell us more about why Cecil, I mean, all lions are magnificent creatures, but tell us more about this particular lion.
First and foremost, he was probably one of the oldest lions that we've had on our study. So it was a lion that we came to know very well. He was very comfortable with tourist vehicles and therefore researchers sitting in their vehicles. So you could spend a lot of time with him and really get to know a lion for what he is in an unrestricted way.
He almost seemed to know how magnificent he was. He would sort of pose.
Yeah, I mean, in the way that lions do, they're the biggest cat on the block. They ooze confidence, so to us, it looks like posing. To them, you know, take it or leave it, they'll do that. We weren't there.
Yeah. Well, and he commanded respect from other lions. And, Craig, that's the story that you tell in the book. We go through the history of how he, you know, he was a cub, how he grew up. And, you know, these lions, although very social creatures, they fight like, you know, crazy for their territory. You tell that story.
Yes, I don't think you can say they fight like cats and dogs, no. But maybe cats and cats.
Right.
This was arguably the biggest animal story that we've come across, and it was global in nature. It was a collective trauma. There was grief, outpourings, outrage. But the real key to do a children's book is what story do you want to tell? And what we didn't want to do, when I say we, it's with my two daughters, Juliana and Isabella. We didn't want to tell a story about his death. We really wanted to tell a story about his life. But that entails finding out the story of his life, and no one better on the planet to tell Cecil's story than Brent, who kept watch over Cecil for 9 years.
Well, Brenton, take us through that, because as a young cub with his siblings, Cecil had to fight for the territory that they eventually took over. And then there was the son of another lion that they took on. I mean, it really is Lion King. There's a son of another lion, Jericho, that he at one point fights. But then what happens?
There was one male lion in each territory, and they were arch rivals. But then, as it happens, two younger males came in, displaced Jericho, chased him out, and then went to the next territory and chased Cecil out. And the two lions were lost to us for a while. Their collars weren't working. And then all of a sudden, one day, I get a call to say, you will never believe it. Cecil and Jericho have met up. They look a little uneasy together, but nevertheless, they're together. And their relationship developed from that point. They came to a truce and realized that individually, they didn't have much of a chance, so they settled their differences and formed an alliance.
Well, but before that, you have an extraordinary picture in the book, one of your photographs, that shows them when they're fighting. It took them a bit to get there. They were fighting for control of territory. And this picture that you take, if anybody has cats and has seen the cats kind of like play and get up on their hind legs and swat at each other, but then it gets, maybe they're not playing as much, you know. It's kind of like that, only they're lions. I mean, reminded that they could have killed each other in a heartbeat. They didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lion fight is really incredible to watch. They're about 250 kilograms each, 500 pounds. And, they're really going at it. But if you think about it, you know, a fight to the death, one of you is going to lose. So it's advantageous not to fight.
Yeah. Well, when you heard, you know, as Craig writes in the book, you're thinking this is not going to end well. But then, lo and behold, there they are together. And you have pictures, glorious pictures of them together. So now I don't know if I should anthropomorphize and call them friends, but there they are. What happened when Cecil died? What did Jericho do?
Well, that's a very sad few days because as scientists, we don't like to anthropomorphize. We're trying to not sort of relate animals to human emotions, but I saw it with my own eyes and it was reported for quite a while afterwards that Jericho was moving up and down that boundary and calling, and not calling confidently, calling in a low contact call, which is really characteristic of an animal that's unsure of itself now and desperately trying to communicate with its coalition partner or its pride mates. So definitely he realized that Cecil was missing and, was a shell of his former self for a while whilst he came to terms with that.
Yeah. Well, then there was another big question, Brent, that you had in Zimbabwe. Traditionally, when a male lion, when the king of a pride is killed, removed, and there's another male that comes in, much as Jericho would, they get rid of the cubs of the king because they want their own bloodline. And Cecil had small cubs under a year. What was your fear and what happened?
Yeah, precisely. So our fear was that once Cecil was killed, Jericho would very quickly kill the cubs so that the females would come into estrus again and he could promote his own genetic legacy. But it never happened. He continued to sort of dominate that area, and recently photographs were published of all seven cubs, still very healthy. They're all females. They're almost out of the dangerous situation now because they're reaching sexual maturity themselves, which means they'll no longer be seen as a threat and, in fact, will start reproducing themselves. So it's been a wonderful story.
Well, no kidding. And Craig, as the storyteller, at this point, if I'm reading this to a child, I'm sobbing. your thoughts, I mean, as someone who looks for these kinds of animal stories, your thoughts?
Well, I think to tell this kind of story, you have to first find an entry point to the story. And obviously, this story has sort of a beginning, a middle, and then an end, and actually with an epilogue. The clan relationship, the Hatfields and McCoys, the Capulets and the Montagues, immediately as soon as I heard about that, as Brent was laying out the history, which really wasn't out in the public conversation already. It's called the goosebump test, and where's this going? And then to find out about the relationship that evolved between Cecil and Jericho was extraordinary. That was sort of the oh my God moment. And we like to think of stories that we meet have the awe principle, which is awe, wonder, and enchantment. And then as we move towards the end, to find out what actually happened after, we do not dwell on Cecil's death at all.
I want to ask you about that. You don't at all. I mean, why is that?
Well, everybody knows what happens, and what we really try and do is invoke a platform for having lots of different conversations. The real power of it begins after you've read the book and you have a frame of reference, and it allows kids to start attaching meaning and purpose to life. I mean, purpose is every kid I've met wants to do something about our endangered species. And the meaning in life is filled with bad things happening, but we have to go on. And so when you can find a story like this, it really does inspire people that out of the darkest hours, hope always emerges. And that's what we think, that's how we close the book.
Well, and Brent, it is a terrific story that Craig and his daughters tell well, gorgeously illustrated by your photographs.
Thank you.
But I just can't imagine you'd rather not have this story.
Yeah, look, as scientists, we're supposed to be cold and distance ourselves from being emotional about our study animals. But to me, that's always been a little bit of a tall ask. You know, I've spent literally thousands of hours in the company of lions, individual lions. So, no, it hurts. It hurts deep. But I think the shining light is Cecil's legacy. I mean, when I reflect on the changes that that individual lion has made for his own species, and I think for a global, geez, just to wax lyrical, I think a global awakening in terms of how we view the environment and our relationship with it, to me, that's the shining light. I try and dwell on that rather than, you know, the physical loss.
Brent Stapelkamp in Zimbabwe, a photographer and lion researcher who followed Cecil the Lion for almost a decade, and Craig Hatkoff, the writer, along with his daughters, of Cecil's Pride, the new beautiful picture book with pictures by Brent. Brent, Craig, thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
And by the way, there's going to be a rally in Washington, D.C. to remember Cecil, and both Brent and Craig are going to be there. So for more on that and to see some of these beautiful pictures of this noble creature,